Jackson trying to escape and run for it, and he's got it more. Lamar Jackson down the sideline. Will they give it to him? They will. Touchdown, Baltimore.
And with 1:17 left to play on Wild Card Weekend, the Hayes in the Barn.
Oh my God! I wish you guys could. I wish we had a camera in here so you could see what we're doing. We're just a bunch of clowns in here.
How much fun is that?
All right, welcome on back to another edition of the Baltimore Beatdown Podcast. It is Friday, October 8th, 2021, coming at you guys with another lunch hour episode type deal, similar to what we did last week on Friday. Apologies for anyone expecting the pod in the morning, but it's been a little bit of a busy week, busy couple weeks, really, for the both of us. Myself, Jake Luke, and of course, Spencer Nathaniel Schultz, who I'm joined by on my screen right now.
Hello, everybody. I think we're in a good place, though. I think we're chill right now. So
I think so too. It's a Friday, you know. We got the good vibes going. Friday rolling, as Bill Simmons used to do. I don't know if he still does that, but here we are. Ravens have a Monday night game coming up on the docket, so there will be no Sunday game. It's going to be another prime time spot, and they are going to be on display for the rest of the world to see. So. We're excited about that. We're excited to break that game down versus the team from Indy, as a friend of ours likes to say. So, it's going to be a kind of a low-key, you know, episode where we're cranking it out and getting you guys the preview that you want and deserve.
Getting it done. The Schmindianapolis, we'll call them the Tolts or the Bolts or the, well, I guess can't call them Bolts, but that team that used to be here comes to town. They're a feisty group that is definitely trying to dig themselves and claw themselves back into a good spot. And they've done that a little bit coming off of a win in Miami, and they were back against the wall. You know, if they lose last week, there's a very different vibe about this team, and they're definitely going to be coming downhill. They've got some big time players, some really physical, elite, kind of instinctive, smart, physical players on both sides of the football. And Carson Wentz, for whatever reason, is like a magic man against the Ravens. He can pull a rabbit out of his ass. His rookie year, when, you know, he had ups and downs, he took the Ravens to the wire there a little bit, late comeback type of deal. Last year, we all remember that kind of bad meltdown that the Ravens had against the Eagles. And he's playing better this year. Definitely playing a little bit better, and we'll get into all that stuff. But Monday night, the bank will be rocking. They're going to be whistling for Omar again, for Michael K. Williams, and going to be a lot of fun. And I tweeted earlier this week and was like, these rookies must be like, wow, is this what playing in the NFL is like? You play primetime every week? 3 out of 5 games. It's crazy.
Yeah, it really is. And the weirdness of the schedule as far as home and away goes, I mean, those rookies, to your point, have played in M&T Bank Stadium exactly once, I guess not counting preseason. So that would be, what, twice? In that event. So it definitely is an interesting sort of split in that regard. But I don't know. Yeah, this is kind of one that, like I said, I think we can keep relatively low key because I don't necessarily think either of us expect this to be a huge challenge for the Ravens. Maybe correct me if I'm wrong, but Colts playing a little bit better, but it's not really bringing the juice in the same way that the last Monday night game did here.
Yeah, I think it's, like I said, I think it's a scrappy team, and they can definitely, you know, string a couple drives together, but I just don't know that they have any real threats on the offensive side of the football. We'll get into it. There's a couple guys, a couple dudes. Their defense has been, you know, below their expectations, but they've got some horses, and they're missing Quentin Nelson. Their tackle situation's a little messy, so I could see this game being pretty competitive until the point where the Colts make a mistake and a bad mistake in a key spot. Let's say, you know, the Ravens have a touchdown lead in the second or third quarter, something like that, a turnover, a fumble, a sack, you know, something of that sort. we'll get into predictions and all that stuff, but let's talk about the Colts offense.
Yeah. So jumping into that, I guess we could also start with the injury report a little bit, because you mentioned Quentin Nelson's not going to be playing. Nyheim Hines did not participate in practice as of Thursday, nor did Braden Smith, a tackle. I'm not sure. He's not their starter, is he?
Yes, he should be.
He is? Okay, so he did not practice. And then Carson Wentz, full participation, but dealing with two sprained ankles. So that was kind of something that a little bit of a funny storyline that was circulating on Twitter recently, but very real thing for him, where he's a guy who's historically been a mobile quarterback. He likes to, at the very least, he likes to kind of dance around in the pocket and use his size and his frame and mobility to cause problems for defenses. It seems like that's maybe going to be a little bit less of a part of his game here as he continues to rack up these injuries, and he's doing so in a year that's pretty crucial for him if he's going to continue on as a starter in this league. So he's on the injury report. Nyheim Hines on the injury report is another notable player, but they got some guys still in the mix as well. Michael Pittman, Zach Pascal, pretty solid wide receiver. So they have some players. Looks like Eric Fisher starting at left tackle. Ryan Kelly, a decent player at center. It looks like they're not playing well by PFF metrics along the offensive line. But, Zach Pascal in the slot, Michael Pittman out wide on the left here, and Paris Campbell also starting at wide receiver. So it's an interesting smattering of players that I don't know like how well they necessarily fit together, but they're getting some football out of them.
Yeah, they're obviously without Quentin Nelson. Braden Smith, I don't think, has played since week two, if I'm not mistaken. He's a big-time tackle there that they signed to a big extension. Traditionally, one of the better ones in the NFL. And I just think that they have a couple horses there. And, getting into the numbers and kind of the tape a little bit of what I saw, Carson Wentz isn't playing bad. He's not turning the ball over. He's definitely still taking sacks, but he's eighth in Sports Info Solutions points earned, which is kind of like going beyond EPA. I've explained that on here before, but going beyond EPA and accounting for the performance of all 11 and 22 players on the field. So he's actually two spots below Lamar Jackson there, who's sixth, just in terms of passing. They don't really use a lot of play action. They're 20% right around, which is 26th in the NFL. So they're more of a straight drop back team. Wentz has actually had a lower completion percentage on play action than he has without play action. I think 21 of 34 qualifying quarterbacks have had higher on play action. Obviously, play action going to open some things up most of the time, especially if it's well designed. He's been hit while he's been throwing 6 times, which is the second most in the NFL, and sacked 9 times, which is the sixth most in the NFL. So, they've got some big-time blown blocks. Eric Fisher, they signed from the Colts coming off of an injury. He's, I think, third in the NFL in blown blocks. So getting, Braden Smith back, if he can play, would be big for them. They also have, what's his name, Mark Glezanowski?
Glowinski.
I can't remember his name. Glowinski. Mark Glowinski has 9, which 7 of those are in pass pro. So I don't think they're doing so hot in terms of consistent pass pro, but that has invited teams to blitz them quite a bit. They don't have I think they're 20th in pass attempts, right around there, but they've been blitzed the 12th most times in the NFL, 34 for Carson Wentz against the blitz, 233 yards, only 161 air yards, which is by far the fewest of any quarterback in terms of the top 15 most blitzes faced. So they kind of like to dink and dunk underneath. He's been sacked 4 times when blitzed, which is tied for the 6th most in the NFL. He's seen the Ravens a couple times at this point. He saw them last year, so he's going to have a level of familiarity. The Colts saw the Ravens last year. The Ravens defense did a great job, especially in that second half, really locking down Frank Reich's offense. So it's going to be interesting to see the battle of attrition there. They don't really use a lot of RPOs. They have thrown 8. 3 of those, though, have gone for 10 yards. They love to throw screens to their running backs. They have 14 total screens. And 9 of those have gone to running backs. Running backs have gotten multiple screens in every game, both Taylor and Hines, big threats after the catch there. So if Hines can't go, that's going to be a heavy workload for Jonathan Taylor and a little bit of Marlon Mack there. So their passing game, kind of dink and dunk underneath, not a lot of play action. They've only thrown the ball 15 times deep or over 20 yards. 22% of Wentz's passes have been deep. That's 22nd in the NFL. They don't run a lot of motion, only 49 dropbacks. They've had motion, 22nd in the NFL as well. Wentz hasn't done particularly well. They haven't generated any explosive plays using motion, or many explosive plays using motion, if I recall correctly. So their passing game, you know, somewhat decently efficient so far. You know, pass pro has been an issue. You mentioned Pittman. You mentioned Pascal. Looks like they've faced, let's see, cover one and cover three. Wentz has been all right, 16th in the NFL in points earned. He likes to spread the ball out, definitely targets Pittman no matter what, but good bit of Pittman targets there. Then against two high looks, which is, you know, cover two, man two, cover four, cover six, he's 7th in points earned. Loves to throw the ball to Pittman and Hines against those two high looks. That's 21 of 47 targets, so almost 50% of the time he's targeting Hines or Pittman. So without Hines in this game, potentially that would be a little devastating to his comfort zone. He's going to have to look elsewhere. And Pittman's been a beast, man. We love Pittman.
We do. In fact, that was my prediction in the 2020 draft as to who the Ravens would pick in the first round. They obviously went with Patrick Queen. So the way that's worked out is interesting with, you know, obviously Queen is having his struggles, and I think we still believe in him. And I also probably wouldn't trade Michael Pittman for Rashad Bateman. So the way things worked out is fine. But it's interesting you mentioned that that's the way they operate, because I think a lot of people do look at Wentz as this physically gifted dude, and he is, and that's what he was drafted upon. But when the issues physically and mentally seem to compound, I think there is a lot of intelligence in the idea of, we're going to run less play action. We're going to make you rely less on your physical ability. We're just going to be straight drop back in some respects and just make you hit the open guy who's kind of in front of your face. And I don't have his passing chart or anything in front of me, but just from what I've seen from them, it does seem to be a bit more of a simplified game. And I wish I had had the chance to sit down and watch some of their stuff. I hadn't quite yet. I had a really kind of busy week, to my point that I was talking about as we opened the show. But yeah, I'm interested to see how they attack a Ravens defense that has shown a lot of complex stuff throughout the first couple weeks, to some success and to some, you know, not success. But they looked pretty damn good against Teddy Bridgewater last week at pretty much everything the Broncos tried to do. Didn't really quite work out, and then Drew Lock could get absolutely nothing going. And I think Drew Lock is an interesting, I don't know the RAS scores off the top of my head, but he might be an interesting comparison for Carson Wentz.
Yeah, I think there's some similarities between Lock and Carson Wentz, like to extend plays, like to, you know, fight, traditionally push the ball deep and all that good stuff, you know, a little sack prone, turnover prone, you know, deep success capable, not really consistent on a play-to-play or drive-to-drive basis a lot of the time, aside from Wentz's fantastic 2017. There we go. Yeah. So, yeah, I think there's definitely a little bit of likeliness between those two. And they do have a great rushing attack to pair with it. You know, without having Nelson and without having Smith and Cassanzo, you know, retiring, which felt like, you know, he was relatively young, but hey, not crazy young. He was in his 30s. But they're a zone-heavy team. We know that. We saw that last year. That's Frank Reich. I think they have – so, for instance, Jonathan Taylor, obviously their lead back carrying the football, has had 44 carries on zone or split zone, and he's 3rd in points earned on zone concepts. They've only had – he has only had 13 carries that weren't zone. None of them have gone for 10 yards. No power or man gap scheme stuff has gone for 10 yards. They're a zone team through and through. Jonathan Taylor is a load, man. He's an elite athlete. He's a truck. He has runaway speed. You know, Adrian Peterson, people had some comps on him coming out of Wisconsin. I don't think he's quite the extreme level of football player and athlete that Adrian Peterson was, but I don't think he's that far off from what Adrian Peterson was. Not a 99 Madden kind of guy that's winning an MVP after tearing his ACL, no, but there's some similarities there. You know, elite athlete, can run through contact. Taylor's gotten a little bit better catching the ball, and that's going to be the test. So this Ravens defensive front really is the key to their defensive success right now, it feels like. Jimmy Smith coming back the last 2 weeks has been, I think, a godsend. This team's going to done a really great job overall, I think, aside from missed tackles, you know, on the back end and in coverage, and this defensive front that, again, didn't have Houston, didn't have Williams, didn't have Matabike. You know, they were trotting out, what's his name? Khalil McKenzie. Is that his name?
Yes. I think he's regular.
McKenzie, who played admirably, you know, Jelly Ellis, Broderick Washington, Calais Campbell. That's all they had in Detroit. People forget that. So, and no Justin Houston, who's been really strong against the run. So this Ravens defensive front being able to stuff the run, not allow open rushing lanes and let guys like, you know, Chuck Clark, Malik Harrison, Marlon Humphrey, Patrick Queen go fill is the battle. And I expect if Nyheim Hines is unable to go, I think that really limits what I would like to do if I'm Frank Reich, which is use Nyheim Hines to go attack those linebackers, take them out of the middle of the field, and get some open targets over the middle of the field, sneak some levels concepts, some things like that behind those linebackers. So I think Nyheim Hines, a big loss. He's gotten a ton of targets for Carson Wentz. He seems like a great safety valve. I love the player. I think he's electric with the ball in his hands. Great all-time quote talking about how every time he goes back to return a punt, he says, "I'm willing to die. I'm willing to die," or "I don't care about my life," I think is actually what he said.
Yeah, him and Kyle Shanahan and Justin Fields have to do some sort of panel discussing some of the ideas that they're putting.
They should do a pod. They should do a mini series podcast.
Yeah, I mean that would be maybe a little bit of a dark listen. So don't
Kyrie
count me.
Irving maybe on there.
Yeah, don't count me as somebody that will be listening to that. But those guys are really getting into some interesting shit. It sounds like.
That feels like the antithesis of the Guru Punch podcast with Ronnie Stanley and Marlon Humphrey.
Have you been tuning in?
No, I have not listened to any of it. I just listened for the clips on social media.
It's Marlon
Humphrey. I don't know if I can. I don't know if I could listen to that for 15 straight minutes.
It's. I listened to both episodes that have released so far in full, and it is 100% what you would expect.
Yeah,
Ronnie Stanley is an incredibly smart guy by the sound of it. Marlon Humphrey, a smart guy in his own way, and they're the perfect sort of personality pairing. I think it's unironically a good listen.
Okay, I'll give it a listen. Marlon just he yells. He's a yeller,
and he I'm is, a yeller. And we on the pod account. I won't say who, but we posted a little tweet about how it was on brand for him to wear his jersey to a high school game. We got a little bit of pushback from somebody within the Ravens organization, and that's totally fine. Maybe we were out of line or whatever, but I would not back down from that. I think that's something he would have done even if the community relations team had not provided him that jersey.
I concur there. I concur there. That's what I was getting at. But yeah, interesting guys. And I'm just Ronnie Stanley in general. I'm just very curious in terms of why he doesn't, they don't need the roster spots. When have you ever heard the Ravens say they don't need the roster spots?
No. And
he's like, not going on IR. Like Wolf goes on IR. I just have never heard the Ravens say we don't need roster spots.
No. And you would think, I guess like it's interesting you say that. And like you would think that they would be thinking the opposite way. But I mean, they, to our point earlier, they did go into Detroit completely handcuffed along the defensive line, like unexpectedly. And they have like two, you know, inactives going into games, which you really don't see very often. They win that game and they're fucking around with the running back room. They just don't really seem to like, it just seems like, all right, we're just going to go into this game with what we got and we're going to win. And to their credit, I guess it's working so far.
Yeah. An interesting approach I haven't seen from a Ravens team. Usually they're, you know, really worried about the 53rd guy on the roster and who it's going to be. And
is this their preseason?
Kind of. This has been kind of a trial and error period. This has been like the beta testing, I would say, for the Ravens over the first month with the guys that they lost, the guys that they brought in, the running back room, the offensive line, you know, the secondary to a degree. So we'll call it the beta testing, and I think they're done beta testing now. There's a little more left in that running back room. And I'll tell you what, man, I've said it, but I'm intrigued by Le'Veon Bell way more than I thought I would be. Just nothing too crazy last week, but there's that classic, you know, oh, well, Greg Roman wants the downhill runner, and Le'Veon Bell's the patient runner. But it's in this offense, just the couple reps I saw, Le'Veon is so unorthodox. He's such a unique mover. The way he kind of keeps
very
his feet
upright, and you know, it's a good word. It's aesthetically like not something that you would expect to see.
Alex Collins has that to him a little bit. Just very unorthodox movements.
Kind of the high and steps, the way that he stands up, you know, kind of tall. It's yeah.
Well, Le'Veon seems to love, and I've never really examined him because he was a Steeler, and I just you know was like, oh, he's a great player, whatever, fuck him, but. He doesn't start running. Like he's advancing towards the line of scrimmage with both of his feet split. Like he's going to do a, you know,
well,
he
skips basically. He kind of
yes,
like,
and he starts a skirt, and that gives him the ability to keep these little movements, these head fakes, these little jerky movements. that are really tough to read as a second level defender. If you're an unblocked linebacker, you've got to be patient too. But that doesn't mean he can't hit it. Once it's there, he hits it, he lowers his shoulder. We didn't get a chance to see what he has in terms of contact balance or just like play strength still, because that used to be, you know, his signature as a physical runner. But I'm interested to see. He can set up some funky stuff. I think he's just tough to read as a second level defender and can set up some holes, set up some blocks that way. And do the Ravens want him to press downhill? Yeah, I think he can, though. I think he just does it in a very unorthodox way. And he spends time behind the line of scrimmage, but he's not the runner that is, you know, post-ankle Jamal Lewis or anything. Like, he's not stopping his momentum, or he's not a back that always wants to get out of the hole he's supposed to go to. Like, there's not a lot of deviation in terms of, like, yards or feet that he moves out of his path. He stays on the line and waits for it to set up. So I'm just really intrigued. I went back and looked at, I was like, oh, that spin move he had, the face mask that should have been called last week. I was like, I wonder how many missed tackles he forced last year on the Chiefs. He had 100 touches, forced, I think, 18 missed tackles between catching the ball and running the ball, which was ahead of some pretty notable guys, you know, more than like Zeke or in terms of like percentage of missed tackles forced.
I don't know if I watched all his snaps with the Chiefs when they signed him to the practice squad, but I went back and watched a good bit, at least most of his touches. And like the burst and the explosiveness, like after he comes out of his breaks, isn't like really there anymore. But like the patience, it'll really help you out. And I think based upon what we saw,
he never was a long speed guy though.
No, right? He wasn't. But like I'm just saying, kind of the explosion out of that, like, you know, kind of skipping thing that he does, it's not quite as like super, you know, striking.
He's not able to apply force and shoot out of a cannon.
Yeah, but you know what it does help is it helps an offensive line that does not have a ton of pop in the running game right now. So, like, you know, maybe the holes aren't there necessarily in the way that you would be used to them to be for the Ravens, but he's in the patient running style. I think it's an interesting and, you know, pretty good fit for an offensive line that might need some help in, you know, opening up lanes in that regard.
It's a style that is so unique and that we just haven't seen a Raven that runs like that, really. I mean, I would say this is not a one-to-one comparison, but the only person I can think of over the last couple of years, I mentioned Alex Collins. They're not the same. Collins always wants to cut back against the grain like crazy, but the only kind of unique movers they've had, I'd say, would be probably Lamar as well. So just having another change-up kind of guy that's funky in terms of run style and able to make some interesting movements is, I don't know. I think it's fun to watch. I think it could be successful. Outside run concepts, that's probably, like, for instance, the Ravens run that touchdown with Latavius Murray out of split back last week. And he, you know, just presses the trigger and runs as fast as he can up the sideline and beats some angles there. Murray's, you know, in his 30s now. He was a guy that ran 4.3 at the combine, but I don't know if we'll see Le'Veon Bell doing a lot of that, but between the tackles a lot, and I like what we saw in pass pro, and I think he's a very willing blocker and just an all-around good football player who doesn't have the juice he used to have, for sure. But I was wrong. I was not really interested in him at all. I didn't want them to sign him. He's been a guy who's thrown some shit fits, and I'm based on just 4 touches, so maybe I'm just going too far with what I saw, but I think he can have a very real role and be a really nice piece in this offense and help them be successful.
Yeah, I mean, everyone talks about the Patriots being the place for, like, malcontents to go and, like, kind of, you know, fit into the culture. But, like, weirdly, that hasn't always been the case in New England the same way people kind of say that it is. I feel like you talk about the Ravens, like, Marcus Peters is one guy who stands out. There are a couple other guys throughout their history that they have done this with. And especially with the fact that I think Le'Veon's smart enough to know that he's not like a centerpiece guy anymore, I don't think that's going to be as much of an issue as I think you were worried about. So, yeah, I think he is an interesting fit. And I guess that kind of does naturally throw us into the Ravens offense versus their defense. So Ravens offense trending upwards at 10th in DVOA right now, 17th in the pass, 7th in the rush, which is interesting considering the production. Going up against Indy's defense, which, let me pull it up here, they're 21st, 26th against the pass, 5th against the rush.
Yeah, they've let up 11 touchdowns through the air, which is tied for the most in the NFL, which is crazy because they actually have only seen 110 passing attempts against them, which is the third, they're 30th in the NFL. It's the third fewest passes thrown against the team. 75 of them have been completed. So teams are completing high 60s there. 11 touchdowns. They picked the ball off three times. They have two dropped interceptions. They've defended seven passes, and they've had three pass interference penalties totaling 62 yards. In terms of points saved against the pass, they are fourth worst. They've saved 10 points, so they're positive, but they're not doing much to help themselves out. EPA per play allowed is positive, which means that they're, you know, not doing well. They are the seventh highest in EPA per play. They have allowed a boom on 31%, which is like a one EPA generated, 1 point on a play, and a bust on only 15.6%. So that's not relatively high. It's towards the middle of the pack. So they're getting beat, man. I don't love this Colts pass defense. And I think that the Ravens, you know, are going to continue to be able to do some things and beat some guys up in the pass game. They are traditionally a very single high heavy team. So they've had 110 passes thrown against them, cover one and cover three. They have defended, let's see, where do they go? I'm blanking out here, bad radio. Where the hell are Colts? There they are, 26. So 48% of the time, just about there in cover one or cover three. So it's about 50-50. They're playing a pretty heavy split there. In terms of man coverage, they are running cover one, cover zero, cover two man. Not a ton on just 24 of those. So a very zone heavy team, a lot of zone. And that's what limits Lamar Jackson more than playing man. So they have that going for them at least. And I'm not sure that they'll be able to do that in this game, but you know, DeForest Buckner, a problem up front as usual. They've got some ballers. I think Kwity Paye has been hurt. I'm not sure if he's going to play in this game. I didn't see their injury report.
He is on the report. He is listed as, well, he did not practice with a hamstring. So
a little limited there. Interested to see what they're able to do in terms of rushing the passer. The big question mark for the Ravens is Alejandro Villanueva, who was limited, correct?
Did not practice.
Did not practice. So that would be a huge loss. Andre Smith going for the Ravens, unless they kind of shock everyone and put Adrian Ealy out there in his first game, which probably is not, neither situation is ideal.
Yeah, at this point, Smith, we don't even have to like analyze either guy. It's just like,
yeah,
it's tough. Like
it's a mega tough scene.
Yeah, exactly. That's what that phrase was invented for. But Villanueva with a knee, I mean, Harbaugh said he didn't expect it to be an issue at all, like right after that game. So hopefully they're just giving him rest, honestly, and saying like, you know what, like we need you healthy. Like, let's not risk this by, you know, putting you out to practice too much this week, which like to the point we've been talking about with Lamar, maybe that's what they're doing with him where he's like been taking Wednesdays off. It sounds like that wasn't the case this week, but
he's definitely gotten a lot of vet days anyway.
Yeah. I mean, vet days for Justin Houston and Jimmy Smith, who didn't practice. Geno Stone with a thigh did not practice. Deshaun Elliott with a quad did not practice, who did not play last week. So
I thought Deshaun Elliott did practice.
It says DNP right here. So
for Thursday?
Yes. I think this is the most recent one.
That might be Wednesday. Yeah, I'm pretty sure he practiced Thursday.
Okay. So, yeah, I mean, it would be good to get him back in the mix, but it just feels like, to our point about the way that they're messing around with the roster and they're messing around with the running back room, it just feels like they are in that experimental stage still, like we talked about, and kind of doing what they're doing with the injury report. Like, they have every right to be confident in themselves and how things have played out because they're at 3-1 after what was a gauntlet of an opening schedule, and they have even more free reign to do that, I think, with a three-game home stretch heading into the bye. And it sounds like maybe they are going to start experimenting even more because, not to bury the lead on the offensive side of the ball, sounds like Rashad Bateman has a big chance to make his debut on Monday night.
That'd be sick. That'd be very cool. I would also understand if he does not, and it feels like if he ultimately ends up playing against the Chargers the following week, a little more of a tough matchup to make that debut, but you know, Villanueva being out's big, but other than that, they're about as healthy as they've been, is what it feels like. So Colts have some beaten, broken, bruised, and damned a little bit. Wentz with the two, you know, ankles that are definitely not helping him. But interested to see how Lamar kind of progresses here. This run game actually gets an extra day to get these backs a little more integrated and continue that. At this point, you know, Murray is probably starting to feel comfortable in a lot of calls. They're leaning on him a little bit more. And there's been a little time, like we said, Le'Veon hasn't had many touches, but, you know, they definitely are giving him touches in practice, Freeman, and then we'll see what goes on with Williams. But it's just very interesting times. I don't know. Freeman hasn't had a lot of touches either, but I think he had a little burst on one run there. I think he's got maybe a little bit more juice than people think. Not a ton, but a little teeny tiny bit more than people expect. So this long week will be nice for the Ravens to continue to lick their wounds and self-scout and plan and plot moving forward. They're going to be home for a long time, which helps, not wasting days traveling at all, which is a major benefit for a team that needs more continuity, more practice days, more reps, more film room, all that good stuff.
Yeah, they do. And it feels like they're at an interesting inflection point with their talent that they have on the roster and the amount of experience they've racked up over the last couple of years playing in some of these tough games. I think that really helped them out over the first 4 weeks. And the fact that they got out of it at 3-1, we keep harping on it, but it's super impressive. And they've set themselves up really nicely for this 3-game home stretch.
For sure. And I'm curious to see how they continue to attack this cold zone defense. They actually had 61 snaps of zone out of 110. I think I clicked the wrong button. But yeah, this Colts team, you know, going to want to take the running away. It's impossible now to not know about that streak that the Ravens definitely want and John Harbaugh definitely wants. And, you know, we haven't heard, I don't know, I didn't see the press conference today on Friday, but got to imagine Greg Roman wants to, you know, one of the greatest run game coordinators, especially in modern football, run game designers, even creators, whatever you want to call it.
I think his presser might be going on right now. And I think he said something about how they definitely want to get it. So,
yeah, so that's going to be a big time battle. And I think it's smart to play the press conference chess game of like, yeah, we want that real bad. And then go try and hit some deep shots, you know, go shred them a little bit in the first half, throwing the football against a team that's struggled to defend the pass, that doesn't really have a ton of pass rushing juice right now. And yeah, so I'm curious to see that, but they're going to want it. They're going to want to run the ball. I don't know. It's tough. Lamar seems not, you know, enthused by the idea of running the ball in the last play last week. He had a sore back. I'm not saying that calling that play was a big deal at all, but just curious to see, you know, how he feels. I don't think he was really looking to go be a 100% committed runner last week that was, you know, juking and jiving and trying to cut guys up and go get explosive runs. It looked like he was trying to just like get first downs and get down a little bit more so. So I'm kind of, you know, hoping that they don't go too crazy about that. And if Lamar's not feeling frisky, which is unlikely on a Monday night at home, so he'll probably have all the juice, all the adrenaline in the world, but hopefully these backs are able to do it and they're able to design some fun stuff using motion or jet sweeps or things like that to get some chunk plays. I don't think we've seen many jet sweep carries, maybe just one, if I'm not mistaken, by the Ravens.
They had one with Duvernay, I think, one with Hollywood at one point.
One with Hollywood too, right.
Yeah, so they're mixing it in a little bit, but I think starting to get a little more east-west would be maybe helpful to an offensive line that is having trouble getting north-south.
For sure. I think that's a good way to attack it. And let's see here. Receivers have carried the ball for the Ravens. I think it's just those two. Let me double check. I have one.
I think Watkins.
Maybe Hollywood must have been somewhere funky on the field, but yeah, definitely at least two.
I think Watkins got one at some point. Maybe I'm misremembering.
Maybe as well. Yeah. So people lined up at receiver have had one, which is charted as Marquise Brown. I do remember Duvernay. Maybe it was a pass to Duvernay, a little touch pass, something like that. But more of those. Use more of those, continue to use those RPOs, continue to do all that good stuff. I think that the Ravens are doing a great job spacing-wise right now. I think Keith Williams and T. Martin have definitely helped the Ravens receivers, plus Sammy Watkins being a vet that has some big-time juice a bit, able to really spread the field out and make zone defenders need to cover a lot more ground in their zone, which leads to easier throwing windows. Ultimately, we're not seeing those plays that result in two receivers being within 5 yards of each other over the middle of the field and allowing, you know, one guy to cover two receivers or two guys to cover three receivers, anything like that. So spacing is definitely a lot better. I expect the Ravens to continue to attack that. And let's see. I mean, let's see some trick plays, man. Like, this is the game you want to go get the rushing record. Well, pull out the bag, Greg Roman. Let's have some fun on this one. It's Monday night. This is the time to, you know, unleash some trickery that would result in people running the ball, some double reverses, reverses, things like that. You know, make this defense really work side to side. And if they got the big boys on the field, make them run, see if you can wear them down, put the ball in Duvernay's hands, put the ball maybe in Prochet's hands, Watkins' hands, Brown's hands, everybody's hands. You know, Mark Andrews even, have him run a tight end jet sweep, something like that. So I'm curious to see what they do to get this rushing record. And the Colts are going to want to stop it. They're a good rush unit. They're, you know, disciplined. They've got Buckner in there who can wreck shop. Beyond him, they've got Darius Leonard who can wreck shop. And they've also got, you know, Julian Blackman back there who can make some plays against the run. And they've got some bigger type bodies in the secondary that can do some things. Rocky Sin, from what I recall, is a strong run defender on the perimeter. Boykin would be curious in this game to throw the horse out there to go block. If he's, you know, maybe able to be active and they choose not to have Bateman hurry back. So interesting spot they're in with those receivers and what they're going to do. Tylan Wallace, definitely the odd man out, who's not going to be activated. But I don't know. These receivers, it feels like they like what's going on, and they might be just kind of waiting to see if somebody gets banged up and needs to, like, go on IR or something until they activate them, until kind of maybe that 2 or 3 week mark hits. So curious to see how that plays out.
People trash on Miles Boykin, like, to an insane degree at this point. If Miles Boykin is your seventh wide receiver that you're considering maybe activating, you're in a pretty good spot with the wide receiver position. No matter what anyone says about the Ravens and the wide receiver position, people getting all snarky. They invested this offseason after all the bitching that we did, and I did, frankly, about how they needed to do that. They did it, and that, you know, it might have cost them a little bit along the offensive line or some other spots they could have invested, but it's paying dividends right now. They needed this help in the passing game. It's helped them through this initial stretch where they haven't been able to run it as effectively. And as far as I'm concerned, the rebuild is at that position, at least, is, you know, it's on very much the right track.
The pass game in general, are they invested in the receivers, the coaches, you know, bringing in a vet, bringing in a rookie, two rookies. So they definitely maxed out in terms of, like you said, renovating that entire room. And I think Williams and Martin have done a great job. I'm not surprised to see Williams start to get, you know, some attention, you know, this offseason, next offseason, something like that. I don't know how long Greg Roman's going to be the Ravens offensive coordinator. It could be another couple of years. They kind of could just have a situation where I've described it previously as, you know, a haven for an X's and O's coordinator who doesn't have major head coaching aspirations, that you get the autonomy to run your side of the ball. Wink and Roman, you know, Harbaugh's got what he wants and what he demands and demands in practice and the way things are run, but he's going to let you call what you want a lot of the time and have all that. So Williams, a guy that feels like he's got a ton of juice, a ton of intelligence, a ton of real world application in the pass game. And I don't know, man, give some credit where it's due. So I think Roman's done a good job letting those guys do their thing and develop more explosive, subtle, you know, kind of violent moving receivers. And this whole thing's been a pleasure to watch. It's been a pleasure to watch the Ravens throw the ball this year.
Yeah, it has. It's night and day, I think, from some of the more unwatchable passing attacks that we've seen, even in the Jackson era. So it has been great to see. I'd be curious to see what Keith's, and, you know, we're four games into his tenure here, technically, so we don't have to talk too much about his future, but I'd be curious to see what his aspirations would be in that regard. If Roman does move on one way or the other, if he'd be, you know, kind of interested in making a step up, because it seems like the impact he's had on the wide receivers alone is huge, not just on a technical level, but on a personal level, to the point that you mentioned.
Well, it goes beyond just receivers. It's the tight ends and the backs too. He works with all those guys in the pass game.
100%. And your point that you've made about how he impressed upon Hollywood Brown that, you know, this game isn't going to be around forever, and that's a big picture meta conversation that is seeming to have a smaller picture effect on him, to the point where he's laying out to catch touchdown passes, and he's not taking his mistakes and compounding them and kind of getting in his own head. He seems like a much more mature person, and I think Keith is owed some credit for that. So I'd be interested to see what his future and T's future are, but they're doing a damn good job so far right now.
They absolutely are. Yards after the catch, I'm trying to find on a per play basis right now. But yeah, and they're just, you know, making those receivers space better. They're making those receivers get in it. I mean, look at Devin Duvernay. That route that he ran last week where he comes in motion. The Broncos are playing that soft coverage. They play that too high, soft, whatever, and comes in motion, starts booking on a wheel route. They've got Hollywood go, you know, take the inside route open. And that for Kareem Jackson, you're looking at one of the maybe like 10 fastest offensive players in the NFL in Devin Duvernay. Seriously, he can fly. And so Kareem Jackson starts to go upfield. Devin Duvernay hit the brakes, turns back towards the sideline, and gets an easy pitch and catch all the way to the sideline. Like, you can just see the difference in Devin Duvernay, and who knows what he did this offseason without those guys.
But you tweeted about the touchdown that he should have had going over the middle of the field, where he ran like a stem to the point that I've never really seen him run, and he, you know, wins inside leverage with just straight up footwork. And we were worried about his ability to develop into an actual wide receiver as opposed to just being a track star who's used as sort of a gadget guy. Like, that was incredibly nuanced job by him to win leverage and catch that ball. And it should have even been, you know, a bigger play. Lamar missed him a little bit, and that's all right. It's going to happen. But yeah, he's been awesome too, man.
For sure. And it's nuanced movement, able to be subtle and give some little fakes and wiggle to it, as opposed to, I mean, he was just kind of like a speed, hands, and grit receiver where he's got size, you know, he's built like a back a little bit. He can freaking fly, and he's got really solid hands. And we're seeing those nuanced movements out of him that give him another year of training with those guys and whatever he did this offseason as well. I'm not really sure. He's a pretty quiet guy, but he looks good. He looks really good and is going to develop into a big time receiver that's playing a lot on the boundary. He's the flanker. He's not the slot guy that we all thought they drafted. He's not super short. He's a bigger guy, so he's a strong guy. Having that speed as well, you know, he's Henry Ruggs can fly and is faster than him, you know, ran 4.2 or whatever. Duvernay's 40 wasn't fantastic, but Duvernay's a lot bigger than Henry Ruggs. He's 10, 15, maybe even 20 pounds heavier, got, you know, thick thighs, big trunk. And that's a scary player that I'd like to see them continue to use right now. Everybody's, you know, super high on James Prochet. He had a nice game, able to do some things, you know, after the catch a little bit. He's a tough kind of receiver that fights after the catch. And, you know, I think he was kicking himself after the game because he caught that wide open pass and just kind of went out of bounds, let that defender take an angle, didn't, you know, go back into space. But we like what we see out of him right now and all those guys. So it's only going to get better with Bateman and Boykin coming back. You're only going to have more types of bodies. You get two more boundary bodies. So they're going to have a pretty full arsenal. I think this is going to be the best pass catching unit. Nick Boyle's going to come back too. So suddenly you've got someone who's probably more of a threat big time over Eric Tomlinson, who I think is Eric Tomlinson is a unsung hero right now. He's been really nice in the run game and blocking and chipping. And we're going to see more of that against the Colts, especially if Villanueva can't go. You're going to send out Tomlinson or Ricard or Latavius Murray, who's 230 pounds, to go chip like we saw last week and help that offensive line out, which is the responsible thing to do. So it's been a lot of fun to watch. This offense is growing leaps and bounds. Lamar, you know, you can just see the torque he's generating. The base that he has is better. His ability to throw over top instead of a lot of, you know, that three-quarter motion where he can whip the ball, you know, up to 20 yards. The consistency is there. He's driving the ball to the sideline, you know, the nose of the football spin and all that good stuff. So I just think this pass game has come a long way. And ultimately, you know, if they're able to come out with a win, sitting at 4-1, facing three more, you know, home games for the entire month, you're getting guys back. You know, the trade deadline comes up. You're maybe able to dish out some of those late round picks you still have from now or from the following year and go acquire something else that you need. And the Ravens are in a good spot. And this is going to be a fun game. Maybe the Colts are able to be extra feisty. They're kind of, like I said, they're 1-3. They're clawing. They've got a quarterback that can make plays. They've got a running back. Pittman's a big dude, balanced receiver. They've got some horses. They've got some playmakers, but they're not cooking on the level the Ravens have been over the last couple of weeks. So, you know, we're probably both going to pick Ravens wins here.
I am picking them to win 31-17.
That's a nice score. I like that score. I like to go with the funky scores, but that sounds good.
I do too, but it just feels like they're due for just a straight up kind of comfortable win, right?
That'd be a 4-touchdown game. And Mark Andrews is due, longest he's gone in his career without a touchdown through regular season and playoff games. He's gone 8 straight games without a touchdown last week. Andre Smith lost me a fantasy game. I have Lamar and Mark Andrews. I lose by 6 points, and that robbed me. So I think we see a Mark Andrews touchdown in this game. I think we see maybe a Tavon Young pick, who I think he sneakily is starting to feel real comfy, real comfortable again. Quietly. It's been a couple weeks to kick that rust off. I'm going to call that. And let's go in the 30s. I'm going to go 20s. I'm going to go 20. Ravens 29, Colts 18.
I like that. That's a really weird one. Might be a scoregami. So, very cool. Very good stuff, bud. And we are on record for another Ravens win, putting them at 4-1, heading into, is it Chargers or Bengals at home the week after?
Chargers. And that's going to be a big game. Chargers are looking like a Super Bowl contender for sure. And they're going to have to do that fabled East Coast from West Coast 1 p.m. kickoff. And I'm going to be on a flight from North Carolina back at, I think it's like 7 a.m. I land. So beers on the plane, that's my favorite way to live life. And I'll be rocking and rolling for that one. I'll be tailgating on Monday. I think I might do this again. There's a place called Hammer Jacks that is under the bridge to the right of the stadium. And I think I'm probably going to go there again. I think it's like a $10 ticket. And then there's food and drink inside. They've got live music. They've got a gigantic screen. They played Red Zone on last week. I don't know what they'll play this week. I guess some NFL stuff. So it's a good time. And maybe that's where I'll be if anyone wants to come meet up, looking for a place to go. And if not, I'll post on Twitter to try and meet up with some people and get all this good stuff going.
Yeah, I'll be working from home, but probably attempt to clock out a little bit early. And I'll be in attendance as well with a friend of the show, Eric, again. So hopefully we can meet up at some point, maybe meet some listeners again. I know you had the pleasure of doing so last time we got out there, so I'd love to do that. So if you see me there, you see Spenny there, say what's up, and we'll buy you a beer or something. So good times, getting back to the bank, having some fun, and the Ravens are having some fun as well at 3-1, and it sounds like we both think they're going to be 4-1 heading out on Monday night. But until then, you guys enjoy this weekend of whatever you got on the docket. You enjoy your Sunday spent with Mr. Scott Hansen, and you enjoy the Sunday night game in the lead up to yet another Monday night game. And enjoy these primetime games while you get them, because it's not always a guarantee that you get 4 or 5 every year like the Ravens have been recently. So enjoy them. Enjoy life. And we will talk to you guys again next week. I'm sure we'll have some sort of hopefully coherent recap posted on Tuesday. If, you know, depending upon the sobriety of both of us and the quality of that episode, maybe we'll come back with another deep dive at some point midweek. I do have a little bit of a guest lined up for Monday afternoon who's going to be good, something different. It sounds like you might not be able to join that one, but if not, whatever, I'll put it together and we'll get something cooking for that maybe at some point midweek as well. So in that respect, we'll talk to you guys then, but appreciate you listening, and peace out.
Final comment. As Greg Roman walked off the podium, he had two words for the decision to extend the Ravens' 100-yard rushing record on the final play. No brainer.
No brainer.
No brainer. See ya.
Arrivederci.
Gourlami. Gourlami.
Arrivederci.
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 Arrivederci. Arrivederci.